day after the spelling bee. It kind of feels like it was my spelling bee.
I was going to congratulate you on your
on my second
success.
Place.
Yes.
In 48 rounds of the spelling bee. So our oldest daughter did year two of the school spelling bee. What they do is they have the fourth and fifth grade classes in the elementary school take like a preliminary test in class. And then the top, I think, five kids per class. Weren't there about five kids in fourth and fifth grade?
Yeah.
Qualified for the school spelling bee. So she competed last year and she did really well, but we learned some things. She got out on actually a pretty easy word because we studied, I took her through, you know, start to finish all of the words, and all of the words that she got right one time, we never revisited. So then about in the middle to the end, we worked and worked and worked on those words for her fourth grade spelling bee competition. And then she went out on the word bomb last year. She thought that the person meant bomb, like bomb explosion. So she spelled it that way and then got out. And so this year I was like, we're going to be better prepared. And I said, if you want, if you care. And she's like, yeah, I really care. So she qualified again. And so we drilled those words like crazy. We spent hours and hours poring over not just the end words, but all the beginning and the middle. And we did some perfect passes where I wanted her to be able to spell every word perfectly. And then the words that she didn't get, we would go over and over them and create little mind tricks to remember how to spell things. And so she showed up to the spelling bee yesterday and she knew every word. And they went 48 rounds until she just was going too fast. She went a little too fast on the word coleus and spelled it C-O-L-U-S and then immediately realized it was coleus is C-O-L-E-U-S. Anyway, the point of this story is that she was able to walk away and say, I did my best. I did everything I could to prepare for that. And I knew that she felt so good because she felt like really there was nothing else she could have done to prepare for that. And I just could see like the confidence and just her whole demeanor after that was she really held her head high walking away from that. And it's such a good feeling, you know, to know that you did your best to prepare for something. I thought we could talk about
great.
That today.
You did great preparing
Thank
for
you.
Your spelling bee.
Thank you.
Good job.
My mom used to say that she got two Eagle Scout awards
did.
Because Most. She did a lot of the work with my brothers.
That's kind of how Scouts works.
for them to get their Eagle Scouts. But anyway, I actually have been thinking about this topic ever since the Super Bowl. Because in a post-game interview, I thought this was absolutely fascinating. No, sorry, not a post-game interview. On the podcast, New Heights, with the Kelsey brothers, I was listening to it the week after. I was actually listening mostly because I was interested in the whole, like, Coach Reed and Travis Kelsey, that drama. But what I actually thought was so interesting was when Travis talked about the double overtime. And how he was like, we ran drills for weeks as soon as we knew we were going to the Super Bowl. And they apparently changed the rules for overtime this year. He said, we had analysts who ran multiple different scenarios. Okay, if the score looks like this, or if they get the ball first, or if that happens, or whatever. And so he said, we didn't even have to think about it. We knew exactly what the play was going to be. We knew what would happen. We knew the rules inside and out. And he said, it was very clear that the 49ers did not know the rules. They did not know the overtime rules. And like I said, they changed apparently recently. So he said, we could tell they were scrambling to figure out what they were supposed to do. And he was like, we were all just cool as can be because they knew what they were going to do. They were prepared ahead of time. And he thought that was really a huge key in what helped them win.
Yeah, which I'm sure it was.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
So it wasn't even necessarily skill, it was preparation, which is fascinating to me because how many scenarios in life are there where we walk into a situation where maybe someone else is like slightly more talented, But my dad always taught me this, Corinne, you are not going to be the smartest. You're not going to be the fastest. You're not necessarily always going to be naturally the best, but you can outwork anyone. And a lot of that outwork comes with just putting the time into preparation. So what are your initial thoughts about this, Neil?
This topic like always scares me to death because I'm not great at preparing a lot of times, but yeah, the times that I have, it's been a really amazing thing.
What comes to mind?
So college always comes to mind initially in like a very, like a lot of negative examples of like waiting for the last minute to write a paper.
Hey, we've all been there.
But aside from that, I think, I would have to say for job interviews, a bad example.
Yeah.
But let's hear it. That led to a good example.
Okay.
So it was, you know, we were first married and I was in medical sales and there was a company I really, really wanted to work for. They're like this awesome company. And there was this really great job opportunity that was huge. I'd been trying to like network with people and talk to people with this company for like a couple years trying to set this up. Yeah, it was huge. Mm-hmm. So finally this guy that I you know, was friends with, another, you know, guy that rep that worked for this company, is like, hey, I need to talk to you. Like, there's this position open. I gave him your name. And, you know, so I was like, boom, awesome. Like, amazing. My, wow, this is it. And the guy called me out of the blue and, you know, asked a few questions. And I just was kind of giving him haphazard answers. And he's like, okay, like, clearly you're not ready for this opportunity. You know, and he was pretty direct and pretty intense about it. He's like, you know, this is a huge job, huge opportunity. Tons of people want this. Like, you're going to have to do some work and research and then let's meet up and let's see what you got.
Yeah.
And so I did a few things and that I thought were kind of like above and beyond, but then I went into the interview and it, you know, just kind of subpar, wasn't that great. And, you know, obviously I didn't get it. But later another job opportunity came up, the one that actually was going to take us here to California from Utah. And there was like a lot of really cool spiritual experiences. But one of the impressions that I had was to call the person who got this first job that I didn't get, call him and ask him what he did to prepare for the interview. So I called him and it was like really cool. It was like a really spiritual experience. Like, I felt impressed. I called him right then. He happened to answer, which is crazy.
Right.
And he happened to have a few minutes to tell me. He was super nice, you know, super nice guy. And I'm like, hey man, what did you do to get this job? And he's like, okay. It's like, I listed out, you know, I called into other areas and got information on all of the customers and kind of who I needed to talk to. I talked to all these other reps and I compiled this book and he gave me this like detailed description of what he put together in this like report in, you know, 30, 60, 90 day plan that he presented with all of the key players, all the key, you know, customers that potentially he would work with and how he was going to do it. And, you know, I hung up the phone and I'm like, no wonder I didn't get the job. Like, this guy just annihilated it. But I knew exactly what I needed to do for this new interview, this next interview.
Yeah.
So and I think I've talked about it on the podcast before, this, just a lot of things that came together for this job opportunity and this interview. I had one shot with all of the founders of the company or the C-level guys all in a room. I was kind of the last one to interview. I hadn't met with them before. There was a bazillion reasons why they didn't want to give me the job, but I presented and was so well prepared and had done all of these things that this other, you know, person had done to get the job that I originally wanted. And I got the job. So kind of a failure, but learning from that failure and then talking to the person who did the preparation and learning what they did. But it was a ton of work. I had to like call in from Utah to like a bunch of hospitals and a bunch of doctor's offices that I'd never talked to before. And like even finding the information and then compiling it, you helped me put together the report and like this,
these
books for each of the, you know, the C-level guys. And, so
I remember you had a notebook or a binder of some sort that you walked into the that interview I had, with,
like, prepared for everybody. Right. So that was one of those times. And I think it, I'd heard that before, is like, you gotta be willing. My brother used to always say this, like, you gotta be willing to do the things that no one else is willing to.
In order to, like, wouldn't get the results. Like, use the phone book? What did he do? He did something with the phone book.
He did all kinds of stuff. But, like, I think he did, he was a real estate agent, and I think he would just hit the phone so hard, mm-hmm. and just straight, like, you know, no one likes to be more cold or less a telemarketer, a cold call. Like, no one wants to do that. And so, but that was the thing that he was willing to do, and just grind it out. And he was really successful.
Well, and on the note of being prepared, I remember one of my mom's really good friends, while Dave was still alive, told me that they were getting ready to sell their house, and that Dave called, and she was like, I had already committed to using a neighbor as a realtor, but she was like, man, he called me and he knew everything about my house. He knew all the comps in the neighborhood. He had his homework done. And when he called me, I was so impressed that if I didn't feel guilty about not using who I had already committed to use, she was like, I kind of wanted to go with him because he just knew everything. He was so well prepared. So that was definitely Dave's MO, was show up prepared.
No, for sure. Yeah.
And on the note too of having a bad experience teach you how to be better prepared the next time. Not that it was a bad experience, but I just didn't even think last year when we were getting Annie ready for the spelling bee to really pay attention to the easy words, because, you know, all of the words that she spelled right one time, it felt like, okay, you know those. Let's focus on the medium and the really hard words. And she had those nailed. And it was such a bummer to her last year to go out on such an easy word at the very beginning. I think she went out on round two. And then this year, and I just saw the regret in her eyes because we worked so hard on all those really hard words. Like, she walked away from the fourth grade spelling bee knowing how to spell all these just, like, wildly gnarly words that most adults can't even pronounce, let alone spell. And so this year, the reason they went 48 rounds was because the kid that she finally just sparred back and forth with, I could tell that kid, he did the same kind of preparation that Annie did. He showed up and he knew every word. And they went back and forth to the point where all of the fourth and fifth grade kids were sitting behind us. And every time they would get a word right after about the 30th round, they would go, because they were just over it. They wanted it to be over. But they went so hard. And then, you know, I was like, inevitably one of these guys, you know, one of them is going to have a little hiccup, and it was Annie, and that's okay. But what's interesting to me about that is that, you know, I think sometimes with preparation, it can feel like, okay, we did something once and it looked fine. If there's something that's really important, you probably need to do it start to finish multiple times, because just because you happen to get it right the first time doesn't mean that you've nailed it and that you're totally confident in it, you know, because something can go wrong the next time. My piano teacher, who prepared me for all these piano competitions, and I was like this, you know, total nerd geek pianist growing up that, like, that's all I did was play the piano. When people are like, what'd you do in high school? I'm like, I played the piano. Like, yeah, what else? I played the piano. That's it. Nothing else. Literally. But she would teach me that amateurs practice till they get it right and professionals practice till they cannot get it wrong. And that, when I have followed that rule, and I don't always, but when I have, it's served me really well.
Yeah. Now, as you're talking about, like, the basic stuff, and a lot of times I hate that because you get all the fancy stuff down, mm-hmm. but then, like, you know, you prepare this flawless presentation and get up in front of, you know, the class or a group, and it's like, you can't hook your computer to the AV system. And it's like, that's the thing that you're like, okay, just simple rookie mistake. But there's a cool talk, and one of the leaders of our church, Dieter F. Uchtdorf, he talks about this. He's talking about Vince Lombardi, the legendary football coach. He says, the story is told that the legendary football coach Vince Lombardi had a ritual he performed on the first day of training. He would hold up a football, show it to the athletes who had been playing the sport for many years, and say, gentlemen, this is a football. He talked about its size, shape, how it could be kicked, carried, and passed. He took the team out onto the empty field and said, "This is a football field." He walked them around, describing the dimensions, the shape, the rules, how the game is played. This coach knew that even these experienced players, and indeed the team, could become great only by mastering the fundamentals. They could spend their time practicing intricate trick plays, but until they mastered the fundamentals of the game, they would never become a championship team. And so I think, like with your example of Annie, like, you know, I think the last year she learned all these fancy words and focused on like the really, really tough ones. But then 80% of the spelling bee was like really basic, easy words that that she skipped over, or a lot of people did, that those were the ones that they missed or went out on.
Totally. Okay, there's some fun little quotations that I found on the internet too about being prepared. Benjamin Franklin: "By failing to prepare, you are preparing to fail."
Classic.
That's a good one. Abe Lincoln, totally known for his epic preparation of his speeches, Gettysburg. He says, "Give me 6 hours to chop down a tree and I will spend the first four sharpening the axe."
That's like just the man.
Yes.
Just legendary.
Yes. So many other good ones, but one that I also love, I heard this actually for the first time when we were hanging out in a group of Christians, lots of different denominations. And there was a gentleman there who shared this scripture, and I was like, "Oh my gosh, I love that. How have I never paid attention to that?" And you were like, "Oh yeah, that's like one of the greats." It's 1 Peter 3:15. "Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have." And this might be like the New Age version of that scripture.
That is MU, I think, is the original one. But that's a favorite of one of the leaders or prophets of our church, Thomas S. Monson. He would always quote that one.
I must have been asleep those years.
It's a good one. Yeah.
But I heard that and was like, man, that's so good. Like, always be prepared to tell people like the source of your hope. Yeah. Yeah. So good. And I think that's something that I really admire about our missionaries, that, you know, they go out and they are well prepared with what to say and how to say it. And even if they're speaking a foreign language, those are like the first basic things that they learn, are just, you know, how to communicate the most important messages, and they drill it and drill it before they, you know, get sent out.
Yeah. No, I remember doing that. That's what we did. And a lot of, it just was the basic things that we would teach people, that, you know, a basic belief in God and who he is, that he's all powerful. He has all knowledge and wisdom. And I think it's easy to overlook those things, but those fundamental beliefs are like the foundational deals and like things that really build the foundation for building faith.
Yeah. I also was thinking about how being prepared can be the difference from having a great experience going out to do something and having a miserable experience. And I was thinking about how my parents came into town 2 years in a row, actually, for the Rose Bowl, because the Utes went to the Rose Bowl the year before last year and the year before that. So in 21, we went up to the Rose Bowl with them. Super fun.
I can't remember. Even it was 22.
No, it was 20. It was like day, you know,
it was
January, whatever, second of 22. And so we went up and watched the Rose Bowl, super fun, even though they lost. And then the next year, I was like about to pop out a baby. So I didn't go to the Rose Bowl, but my parents came into town, my siblings came into town, and they all went to the Rose Bowl. But I can't remember if it was the day before or day after. They took everybody to Disneyland for a day. And it was raining, pouring rain. Actually, they showed up that morning and it was just drizzling. But on my like list of Disneyland must-haves are, if there's even like a small chance of rain, you bring ponchos, waterproof shoes, you know, rain jackets for kids, the works. But they didn't have those things. There's no fault here. There's no like finger pointing. But just to give an example, I felt so bad because my mom was like, "Oh my gosh, it was miserable. Like, your kids were having a great time because they're a little bit older, but the littles, like the toddlers,
it's like not fun.
Were miserable. The adults were miserable. Most everybody in the group was completely miserable. We weren't there because I was, again, at home contracting and about to have Bobby. But I just felt so bad. They spent all this money on these Disneyland tickets and had kind of a crummy time. And then in contrast, because we are Diz nerds, as they say, seasoned Disneyland goers, being, you know, residents of Southern California for as long as we've been, we went to Disneyland on, what day was that? President's Day recently.
Yes.
And we knew it was, there was a chance of rain. Actually, when I bought the tickets, it said it wasn't going to rain. And then the forecast changed, as it does. And so we said, all right, the Sunday night, you know, we were getting our stuff ready. And I was like, we better get everybody waterproof shoes out, raincoats. When we got there, we, you know, you and I both wore, well, actually you didn't, but I wore waterproof shoes and made sure all the kids did. And then we got there, we bought ponchos and we had a great time. Even though it was raining, everybody stayed dry, everybody had fun. And it wasn't because of anything other than we came with the right stuff. And you always talk about how camping was kind of miserable for you. I just hate
camping
growing up.
In general.
Yeah, but why did you hate camping as a kid?
Because I never had good equipment.
Yeah.
I was just like would show up with a sleeping bag, kind of like stuff all my whatever I needed into a sleeping bag and then like bundle it together with a rope. And then that was kind of it. And it just inevitably was miserable. And then my buddies would show up or like another dad would show up for camp and be like, your dad, totally.
Yeah, my dad.
Like full on, you know, unfold this like burner with like three stoves and cookware that's like folded up. And then, you know, all of this spring bar tent and bed. And like, you know, I've got my like little thin sleeping bag with my rope tied around it. And I'm sleeping on the hard, rocky bottom of the tent. And I'm like, this is just miserable.
Yeah, no, my dad was definitely to the extreme. The prepared camper. And I mean, my siblings, I don't know if I've told this story on the podcast, but my family was all together once at my parents' house. And I told them they were watching the show Alone, or no, not Alone. Is it Alone? Yes. Where they go, they get sent out to the wilderness and they have to survive alone. That's what it is. And I was like, I think I would do better than the average girl on this show. And they all just like belly laughed, like busted up laughed so hard at me because I'm not a camper, not an outdoorsy girl. I'm an indoorsy girly, and that's okay. I will own it. But my dad did teach me how to do all the basics. And that was my point, was like, okay, most girls wouldn't know how to do a lot of the things that I know how to do. I can gut a fish. I could for sure pitch a tent, start a fire. Like I know how to tie the food up so that the bears don't come, like, you know, tear your tent open and try to eat your food in the middle of the night and then eat you too. Like, I know all those things because my dad taught me how to do the things that you need to do when you go camping. And he was always Mr. Overprepared for everything. And I love him so much for it. And I feel like a lot of that I've inherited and passed down to some of our kids, maybe not all of them, but you know, we have one kid who likes to lay out her outfits at the beginning of the week and be totally prepared with what she's going to wear.
Very intense.
Yes.
That way.
Yes. Intensely preparative. She's into preparation. We'll say that. And our church has really leaned into preparation too. It's very interesting that they've taught a lot about having food storage and having water and having, you know, provisions on hand so that if you have a natural disaster, or even if you have like a season where it's hard to feed your family, you've got something at home. You've got food, you've got some food storage. And that was the reason that we actually became friends with Andre in the first place, was because he shared this really cool Instagram story right when the war started in Ukraine about how he was like, yeah, I'm not worried about my food supply because my church has been teaching us for years to have food storage in our homes. So then that story kind of went viral, and then that's how we ended up connecting and becoming friends. But what do you feel like you've learned over the years about being prepared, you know, that has served you well?
I think the biggest thing is like spiritual preparation. Yeah. 'Cause like a lot of physical stuff you can kind of do or, you know, get or whatever. But I think like the mental physical or spiritual, especially spiritual.
Yeah.
If it's hard to like do something about that, because that's where like the mental toughness can come in, or like the surrender ability to believe in God and be like, have grace and like power beyond your own. For me, and I think of the time leading up to, you know, major challenges in my life, just in the last several years, I think of just what I learned in recovery with dailies, like doing mm-hmm. spiritual, taking spiritual actions every day and yeah. kind of building that muscle, that when those times came, I felt like, one, it was like muscle memory spiritually. Like I knew yeah. what to do. I'm like, oh, I pray. I read my scriptures. I, you know, reach out to other people. I go to church. I go to the temple. Like I already knew and was doing what I needed to do. Mm-hmm. And then that gave me the strength. So I think spiritual preparation is one for me that has been the biggest.
Yeah. Cause they say your addiction's in the next room doing pushups.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the reality of it.
Yeah. And I've noticed that also with, as I've incorporated my dailies into my daily practice too, that it's been helpful for me in every area of life, as a mom, as a business owner, as a friend, as a, you know, a daughter, a wife, all of these things, that when you set up your day correctly, like you're saying, the dailies, then you really prepare yourself for whatever ends up knocking you over, because inevitably something will throughout the day, or at least throughout your week. And so I like that too, that, you know, your preparation at the beginning of the day helps you to kind of get strengthened and guarded for whatever is going to come at you. I also thought this little anecdote was interesting from Steve Jobs and the iPhone. You know, he's very famous for his iPhone launch, and I still remember it. In 2007, he launched the iPhone, and apparently he rehearsed that presentation hundreds of times, which is kind of interesting for someone like him. You would think like, oh, he's such a professional. He's so seasoned. He had been doing that forever. But to think that someone like that would prepare by running something hundreds of times, no wonder it ended up being just epic, you know? And I think that a lot of times we can look at someone like that, or like a Michael Phelps, who he, in the book, The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg, which I absolutely love that book, he talks extensively about Michael Phelps and his preparation and his drills that he does, and kind of all of the ritualistic things that he does to get ready for a race. And I think as a spectator, you can turn on the Olympics once every 4 years and be like, wow, this guy's just ultra talented. He was like a freak of nature, you know, born with like these extra long limbs, and like, yeah, no wonder, like must've been easy for him. But really, like, you don't see the hours and hours of preparation and giving things up and ultimately just, you know, building up to that one little moment. And I think that a lot of excellence that we see, things like, you know, the Super Bowl and these best football players in the nation putting on this amazing show together, we don't see those hours and hours of running these like really boring drills of, okay, what if this happens? What if that happens? You know, and all of the mental preparation that they're doing. Okay, just in case this is the scenario, we know what to do. And what if this happens? Then we know that this is the path. So, you know, how does that apply to us? I think that, you know, if you have something that you're going to do that feels really important, if you're going to give a talk or some kind of presentation, or, you know, anything where it really matters to you what the outcome is, one of the best things you can do is just feel like you've practiced it so many times that you could do it in your sleep. And the times that I've done that, they feel so good, even if it doesn't go perfectly. You're like, I was so well prepared and I did my best. The times that I didn't do that, and in fact, one that always sticks out in my mind, is when I competed in Miss Utah. I cringe when I think about that experience because I was so underprepared. I had an entire year to prepare for that experience. And I tell my girls this story all the time, that I was just too distracted by this dumb boyfriend that I had that year and the romance that, you know, and that's the thing too about having a boyfriend in college, is like you just lose out on so many fun things. But that's another topic for another day. But I knew that I had this opportunity that year to prepare for something that I probably would only do once in my life, and something that maybe other people think is silly, but for me, that was like something I had dreamed of my whole life. And I mean, literally when I was like Millie's age, like 5, I would watch Miss America with my mom and say like, I want to be Miss America when I grow up. So this was like this lifelong dream that I was on the path for, and I didn't prepare, was all distracted with this, again, stupid romance and toxic boyfriend. And then we finally broke up a couple of months before, and I tried to scramble and it was too late. It didn't matter that I tried to hurry and rush and get prepared, because I was competing against all these women who actually like worked their butts off for an entire year. Because everybody had the same path of preparation. Everybody gets their local title. I was Miss Provo, you know, and if you're Miss whatever, Miss Draper, Miss Harriman, Miss Salt Lake Valley, like you all get your local title in the summer and you have one full year to prepare for the state pageant. So everybody shows up with just about the exact same amount of time to prepare. And you can just tell too, when you watch like a state pageant, or even like if you ever watch a Miss America or whatever, you can tell the girls that really show up and they have drilled these things so many times that it's like almost impossible for them to mess up because it's second nature. So I think back on that experience and I'm like, dang, I mean, I don't know for sure if I could have won Miss Utah, but I definitely could have walked away without regrets. I think I actually told this story when we did the regrets podcast, but you know, there's experiences like that where I'm like, oh, I could have been prepared. And then there's experiences like my first time at the temple that I talked about with my dad on the temple prep episode, where I had absolutely phenomenal temple prep, where I took more than one class, and just not because of anything great I did, but because I was just incredibly fortunate. And there was a man who offered this temple orientation, and he walked me through everywhere in the scriptures that I would see God taking a man up to the top of the mountain and showing him how he created the earth. And he showed me that over and over in the scriptures. And then when I showed up to the temple, I was like, oh yeah, I just read this in the scriptures. I'm totally prepared to understand exactly what's going on here. So, you know, for me, and I think everyone else, those contrasting experiences teach you that in order to really fully experience something in the best way possible, you want to come as prepared as you can, and then you can leave with no regrets.
Yeah. No, because I hate that feeling too. I think it's the frustration also of knowing that you could have done better. Mm-hmm. Like knowing, like, I know for a fact I was capable of being like excellent at this thing.
Right.
It just was a matter of being like sloppy or lazy or procrastinating or doing something. So it's like the knowledge. It's one thing, I think, if you really work hard and prepare, and then maybe you come up short, like, okay, I know that I did my best, but it's that frustration of knowing I could have done better.
Yeah.
So really, really cool examples. Sorry, Corinne's ex-boyfriend, if you're listening. So
he's not listening. What else? Do you have any final thoughts?
No, I think again, just for me, it's this, I think spiritually, the spiritual preparation as far as like, priority, like that one strengthens all of the other ones. Like if I can get that one right, a lot of times, like, I feel like God will show me which ones I need to focus on, because I think there's so much in life that you can try and do, but having the inspiration to know which things to prepare on, or maybe weak areas that I can prepare or do more. That's really where I try and focus, and I'm trying to get better at doing that, because I feel like that's the most helpful for me.
I feel like you're really good at that.
Well, thank you.
I mean, how many people have like a daily routine like you do with these, you know?
I'm sure a lot of people I know do.
I think a lot of people just roll out of bed and they just like wing it.
Well, I've done that a large portion of my life, so I'm not patting back on the.
I have too, but I'm just saying that the discipline that you use for your recovery is really cool.
Oh,
that's something that I admire.
Necessity, so thank you.
A necessity, but also a choice. You know, it's not something that you just are like, nobody's forcing you to do that. Your mom's not here to be like, all right, Neil, did you do your dailies? Not that your mom's really not like that anyway.
She wasn't.
But yeah, I think that if I think about preparation right now in my life and the things that are the most important to me, I think that teaching our kids to be prepared for some of the most important, like, life-changing moments are what I think about a lot. And I think about how my parents did a good job of that, of preparing me to make decisions, make hard decisions before the moment. You know, they did a lot of like, let's talk through scenarios. Let's talk through choices and consequences. Let's talk through what it will look like if you do drugs or if you get pregnant in high school or, you know, and we had a lot of really frank discussions about let's be prepared before you hit those situations. And so I try to have, I mean, I don't want to overdo it. I don't want to like, you know, make my kids feel like every time I'm in the car with them, I'm going to like, okay, let's have a talk. But I do think those conversations are crucial because you want your kids to be prepared and not feel like they just kind of decided in the moment what was going to happen. And that's something I think about all the time with how can I prepare them, you know, for those hard situations. That those are like small decisions that can oftentimes, like, you know, totally change the trajectory of your life. And not that there's like not coming back or changing or, you know, that's always there, the opportunity to come back. But I think a lot about how I want our kids to learn preparation before like those hard things come. And then there's things in life too that you can't prepare for. There's no way that we would have known. You don't know what you don't know. Like, we didn't know to study the easy words as much as we did this year until we experienced last year and said, oh wow, the easy words are actually kind of where it's at. Like, yeah, you have to know all the hard words, but you gotta like drill those easy words over and over and over and make sure you can't get them wrong. And there's things like grief that I didn't understand until we went through it. And there's really nothing anyone can do to prepare you for that. There's kind of nothing anyone can do to prepare you perfectly to be a parent. There's a lot of things in life that you can't be prepared for until you get to it. But I do think that going back to what you said, doing the daily things to especially spiritually keep yourself prepared helps you to experience those new big, you know, mountains to climb. Thanks so much for listening to Mint Arrow Messages. We're so grateful that you spent time with us today. Make sure you go follow us at Corinne Stoko or at Mint Arrow Messages on Instagram. And then if you have a second and you love the show, I would love it so much if you'd leave a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts. That's the only way people can find out about us if they haven't heard about us before. So just go tap the stars, leave a rating or a review. If you have a second, we would appreciate it so much.